Today, we're speaking with Caroline Duell, who is the founder and president of Elemental Herbs, which is based near San Luis Obispo, California. Is that right, Caroline?
It is. We're in the northern part of the county between Morro Bay and Atascadero.
Great. And what drew me to your company was a press release earlier this week that you had just become certified as a B Corp. And so I'm interested in companies who are doing good, of course, and talking to their entrepreneurs, and especially smaller ones, about how they got these businesses off the ground and how they're going about making them socially responsible and sustainable. But what struck me about Elemental Herbs in particular was that you had a lot of different programs that tied into and supported your social mission. So let's start with the background of your company. You were a massage therapist for 10 years before, and you started Elemental Herbs in 2005. And I read that you and your business partners started it by cleaning up a junkyard.
Well, it's actually two stories interwoven, to tell the truth.
Okay.
So as far as the company goes, it started very organically. I never had a business plan. I had nothing but a healing plan, and that was that I was a massage therapist. I was actually working as a massage therapist and a rock climbing guide, and my husband and I were living on a farm where he's a farmer, and he was partnering with the farm owner to grow vegetables, and she asked me to install a medicinal herb garden, which I did, and I had a background already in making medicinal herbal formulas, so I knew how to create the concoctions, and just for personal medicine, I always went to botanicals. So as a massage therapist, it was, you know, I was interested in finding healing components for my clients. As a rock climbing guide, my hands would get destroyed, as would my students. So I literally just wanted to create something that would be great for massage clients and for rock climbing hands. And while getting hired to install this medicinal herb garden, I started working with different plants for the skin and planting them together in the garden, and then created the formula that we still use now, All Good Goop, out of that. And that was back in 1998. So the roots of it are much deeper than the company. After I created it, we really just were giving it away to friends and selling it at farmers markets and had a very small distribution. And that was up in Northern California in Marin County. And then my husband and I moved down to San Luis Obispo County with our land partners, who we decided to go in and buy this junkyard and turn it into a farm. And at that point, I actually abandoned the healing salve. I didn't continue to make it. I kind of took the farm on in full force and just was working really hard to remove metal and plant plants and restore this land that had been so badly damaged. And I started getting phone calls from up north, people saying, "What do you mean you're not making that anymore? Where's the All Good Goop?" So I got back in the kitchen and started making it again, and was able to source the herbs from the farm I had been on and to source from local farmers. And the more I did it down there, I realized that there was this perfect integration with, you know, restoring this healing salve and restoring this healing business, the junkyard into a, you know, healing it into a farm. And so that's now where we're headquartered, is that farm. But it was, it's all separate businesses. So on the farm itself, we have a natural builder and a farmer and myself doing the healing aspects. And then the business, I have another business partner who does the marketing up in the Bay Area still. And then my husband does the sales. So it's kind of the integration of those two stories.
Right, so that's interesting. So you, and then now you have this business that really was sprung from the kitchen and really a garden, a true cottage industry.
Exactly, right.
So what type of, well, let's see, so you didn't start with a business plan. Did you ever, it sounds like probably you didn't have to go after funding because it grew organically and it grew from, you could build it up as much as you had profits from your sales. As much as it allowed you to. Is that right, or did you?
Yeah, that's exactly how we started out. And then after a couple of years of being a little more serious about it, I did get an SBA loan out of a local bank in San Luis Obispo. So that was in the beginning of 2008. And that was just so that we could expand our markets and grow as we've introduced new products, as you've seen.
Mm-hmm. And so what is your demographic for the market now?
Well, we sell to, our customers are stores, so as far as that goes, we sell to health food stores and sports shops. And we'd like to say that our products are pretty fantastic across the board for many different populations. But really, we are interested in connecting with people who are learning about herbs and want to use them in everyday use. So replacing what's in their medicine cabinet or in their first aid kit or their bathroom cabinet with botanical or originated products.
Mm-hmm. And the business partner now that you have for the marketing, how did you meet up with him or her and form that partnership?
That's a great story, actually. His wife and my husband grew up together, so that's our connection, is a very close family ties. And I think it was in 2004, sent out an email to everybody that I could think of that had any sort of design capabilities with a label that I had just recreated for our All Good Goop. I sent it out to about 25 people, and I got lots of responses, looks great, or change this, or what do you think about that? And Burr Purnell, who is my marketing partner, replied to the email, what about this? And he had completely redesigned it. And I just didn't even realize that something could be so transformed with it was so quickly. It was amazing. I was like, oh, my God, this is incredible. I'm so excited. Thank you. So I took his design and used it. And then I realized, well, wait a minute. It can't just be the label that looks like this. He's changed everything. So we have to, this has to fit with the rest of the brand. And I started calling him more, and we realized after a few weeks we were working together, and then after a few months we realized there was going to be a longer-term relationship, and after a year we became business partners.
Hmm. And did he embody some of the personal values that you do as well and interests?
Yeah, absolutely. We wouldn't have it any other way. It's in terms of the social and environmental values of the company, they're intricately woven into the fabric, into the very foundation of who we are and what we do. And that's one reason why it worked so well with Burr, because he recognized that and he was able to, take that not only from the perspective of practices and how he practices and what he does and how he lives his life. I mean, he lives in a more urban area, but he's got a little permaculture backyard, basically. He and his wife grow their food for their family, and they have chickens, and they have family over all the time families in the neighborhood over all the time to learn about growing food and taking care of themselves and things like that. So it was just it was a perfect fit in that way.
So as your business was growing organically in both senses, but did you ever, and you have these values, so I like to ask people this, did you think, okay, if we hire or as we do this initiative or we expand into this distribution channel, I want to make sure that our values are being showcased, and so I want to make sure that we have a social mission. Did you conscientiously think of these initiatives as being aligned with sustainability responsibility, or was it just natural in the way that you process and dealt with decisions?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of a radical in a way, so the biggest compromise for me is the business at all. So it's interesting in that sense. I probably, much to, if you look at a conventional growth model, the way that we've grown and the way that we've chosen to do things, one might say that we've limited our growth by choosing to be true to our values from a social environmental perspective. Then we can talk about specifics if you want, but to me, there's no other way to do it. I didn't see the point. We're coming from a healing background, and our vision is that people are inspired to live in balance with nature. And so if that's my vision and that's our company's purpose, then how can I go about, continuing growing a business that is not actually thinking about the consequences of how it practices, not just the ingredients of what's in the actual formulas. But you know, to argue against the point that I just made of limiting our growth, we actually seek mentors in the industry. We look at other businesses and we look at what they've done and we look at how they've paved the way. And on a personal level, it's always been pretty easy for me to make choices that I feel are more aligned with a restorative process for the earth. But on a business level, there are some compromises and there are some really hard decisions and there's some times when there just isn't an alternative out there for the way that we'd want to do things. So by having companies that really showed us the light in a sense, it's been very helpful to recognize when and where choices, you know, can be made, and that there are often solutions that aren't just on the surface out there. So, you know, for one example is Patagonia. Yvon Chouinard, who is the founder and head of Patagonia, a quote from him was that he's never made an environmentally responsible decision in business that was a bad business decision. And I really take that to heart. And I think that in the end, it all comes back around in a very positive way. And like I said, there's no other way to do it. So
he and Patagonia are some of the businesses and leaders that I study. And I had just written about a post on their daycare center, but it was leading with that quote, basically, how these are always mutually beneficial, the decisions he makes from his, you know, a point of consciousness always benefit his company financially.
Yeah, and I believe that across the board, not just in business, but in education, in, you know, government, in athleticism, or, you know, any kind of in sports.
Could you share one or two examples of the decisions that Elemental Herbs is faced with?
Sure. I have to think of something like, one good example is how we travel as individuals in the company and where we go. And we made the choice to buy two diesel vehicles, and both of them run on biodiesel. And at our farm, we've actually started a project of making biodiesel out of waste vegetable oil from local restaurants. So my husband goes and delivers vegetables to restaurants, and then he can pick up oil that they use. And we've been actually expanding the plant right now, so we're getting biodiesel from another source. But in general, the choice to do that was from the beginning. There are a lot of different ways you can go. You can buy a cheaper vehicle that's gas powered, and sometimes gas is cheaper than diesel if you're on the road. But for us, that was a big one. So we're running our fuel on diesel. Another just really basic one is all of our printing solutions for all of our marketing materials. We work with a company in Berkeley, California called The Greener Printer, or Tulip Graphics. They are online, and we do 100% post-consumer recycled, you know, non-tree-based printing. And it's expensive. It's more expensive than if we were to just use some bleached white virgin forest tree paper from China, believe it or not. But it's the most important thing we can do in that way. So that's another good thing. And you know, there have been times, I think there's some specific times within that where, do we have time to go with the greener printer? Well, you know what? We have to wait, and we have to do it the right way, versus just going quickly to Kinko's and doing something that, you know, that you can just get run off in a day or something. I think that's probably one of the biggest things I've learned, is that, there are no real secrets and there's no real magic to creating ecologically responsible solutions, but it's so much about planning and about being organized, because every time I'm behind the ball on something, or every time we have to do something quickly, or we've messed up and we're behind the times, or we haven't planned ahead, is when we're like, are we going to have to make a sacrifice here? And usually we can pull it off. But if I always reflect that if I had just thought about this a little bit more ahead of time, then that's kind of the extra little piece that I need in my brain to remember that not only are we going to have to get this done, but we're going to have to get it done in a way that is aligned with what we believe. So,
Yeah, that's interesting because, I mean, I could see how that would happen often in so much about business, and particularly I think when you're making retail and wholesale products, it's about moving quickly and having to scramble often. And so that's, I could see that being a real challenge. Is it hard to maintain that moral compass or that internal compass that kind of keeps you on track of, well, we're going to just have to do the printing later because we want to go to a greener printer? Or how do you deal with that when, because it comes up frequently?
Well, it's on a case-by-case scenario for sure. And so we always just, we basically just run it through our own set of standards of, you know, well, let's weigh this out here. And that's kind of constantly what it is weighing it out. But, you know, the other thing is to take it back to the bigger picture, which is that what's our intention here? What's our overall measurement strategy for the choices that we're making in terms of, if you look at carbon footprint or if you look at waste created or whatever it is. And so if I keep the bigger picture in mind, which is that this is who we are and this is how we're moving, if we have to sometimes do something, you know, like use 30% recycled paper versus 100%, that's where my business partner is a really good balance because, you know, we'll both freak out about it, but then we'll remember that if we don't exist as a business, then we can't make these choices at all. So that's kind of, but I don't feel like it really comes down to that. I feel like it really is more on the level of the bigger picture of if we're, you know, if we're conscious about what we're doing and how we're doing it, then and where we are and accepting where we are, almost like you could overlap it with a philosophy of yoga or Ayurveda or some kind of healing embodiment that, you know, if you understand where you are, you're taking care of your body, there's always going to be times where you make sacrifices or you'd step off the track a little bit, but generally you're always going in the direction that you're choosing. So that's kind of how we look at it.
What are the costs associated with the financial costs, I would say, associated with making these decisions around sustainability and responsibility? Are there areas in which you find yourself saving financially? For example, with the biodiesel,
absolutely,
is that a cost saver?
Absolutely. I think there are a lot of places where we actually save money. I mean, just by, you know, in the office, being conscious about using paper twice or things like that, we save money. But on a bigger level, membership affiliations and the consortiums that are being created out of like-minded companies and like-minded people, there's a community growing where we are all, as companies, recognizing each other's efforts and wanting to support each other in those efforts. So not only saving money, but, you know, places to make more money. Like, for example, we partner with Patagonia Footwear in lip balms and provide them for them and gives them an opportunity to talk about how our values are aligned. And for us, it's obviously we appreciate so much in who they are and what they've done that they bring our name into a higher level. Just by becoming a B Corporation, I would highly recommend it to any company for a number of reasons. The first, and it's a little bit of a tangent, but to me the most important reason.
Can I ask you, Caroline, just before we get into the B Corp, because I definitely want to hear what your process and your reasons were, but can you just talk a little more about the partnership with Patagonia? That was another question I had.
Yeah. Well, it's
what is it? How does the partnership work?
Well, it's basically just that they are choosing to do promotional marketing materials with our lip balms, and we are both 1% for the planet companies. So through that, and also just their ethos of best product, least harm is kind of one of the big components of them. They're building a brand and building their actual products, and so we provide lip balms for them for their marketing. We share athletes, and we share the 1% for the planet, and we're still working on different ways of creating channels for exposing the importance of everything that we do in terms of ingredients and that kind of thing. But it's basically that bringing that concept of working with like-minded businesses to create a bigger momentum in the movement and to and to shed a positive light on both brands, really.
Mm-hmm. So almost in the way that companies would benefit from aligning with the traditional Chamber of Commerce and certain partnership or member discount, business discount deals, you're finding that having this these various networks of responsible businesses can provide a lot of advantages in cross-marketing and promotional efforts as well as learning.
Right. And it's so fun. I mean, that's another component of it. It's so fun because we're all brainstorming, always trying to make things a little bit better and through that, you know, having a good time together.
So then what made you decide to go through the certification process to become a B Corp? I know that it's not easy. And what advantages did you see that it would provide?
Well, basically, one of my biggest personal challenges in business has been how do I communicate and how do I expose the parts of this business that are so important to me that you can't say that, you know, on a jar of a healing salve. You can't express that through a rep going to a buyer or you know, there's no really simple way to explain how deep our core values run. And so for me, becoming a B Corporation is basically, it's a simple language to communicate what we do. And that's just
it. I'm sure they would love to hear that because there's, you know, so much of what makes an organization and a label like that powerful is a general understanding of what it stands for.
Yeah, and I think we're in it a little early in the game, and I think it'll become more that way. So some of our other membership affiliations are Green America Business Network, and those guys are similar. They're a network of green businesses, and they also run the Green Festivals, which are a series of trade shows around the United States to celebrate sustainable business. And those guys had a similar survey type of process, you know, different organization, but that was the same kind of thing for me. It was like 1% for the Planet is another member affiliation that we have, and that is very specific, right? We give 1% of our revenues, so of our gross sales, not of our net profit, but of our gross sales, we give 1% to a couple of environmental organizations. And that to me is like, okay, you see that stamp, and that's a clear little communication to you. You know what we're doing with our money, okay? And then the thing that leaves out is you don't know how we run our business. We could give our money away, but you don't know how we run our business. So to me, Green America, that was the first step there. And then B Corp takes it a step further because it weaves it into the legal aspects of our company. Actually, in our bylaws, we have environmental and social responsibility stamped in there, so that no matter what happens to the company, it's a part of who we are as we move forward.
And did you have to amend that as part of the certification process for B Corp?
Yeah, and you know it's like I said, we're still on the growing part of the wave here because there's not an actual legal status in California, but
mm-hmm.
there will be one day, and at that point it'll be binding and. For the meantime, basically, we were required to have a board of directors meeting and to vote on it and to have it documented in the minutes that this is a choice we're making.
What other states do you know? What other states support?
I can't remember.
Structure?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think Pennsylvania was the first.
Philadelphia just passed some tax incentives for
yeah.
sustainable businesses, which
yeah.
B Corp is working on.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know further than that. Talking with B Corp would be good to find that out specifically.
Yeah, I'm going to have to make that a research project. Okay. So are you expecting or looking for services from B Corp, or is it really just the type of affiliation what that stands for?
Yeah, I mean, really, it's just an affiliation, and then kind of the side effects, which I didn't anticipate ahead of time, are more of the network that I was talking about before. That there's a core group of partners that all want to offer each other services, and we've created amazing savings through that. We you know, just to name a few, Nexternal is an e-commerce platform, and that's what we're going to be using for our shopping cart on our new website. And they offered us an incredible discount because we're both B Corps. And then, I mean, that's just one example, and it goes on from there, really.
And so we mentioned a couple of the different initiatives or elements of your business that are sustainable. But I wanted to, you do your packaging is from recyclable and recycled materials when possible. As we mentioned, your vehicles they run on biodiesel. Your ingredients are organically and or sustainably sourced. I also read that you have a supply chain audit for each product. So how does that work? When I hear supply chain audit, because I've never worked closely with that myself, it sounds tedious, it sounds time-consuming, it sounds cost-intensive, and it sounds like it would produce a lot of bad news. Can you share a little bit about what that's like for you?
Yeah, absolutely. You kind of nailed it. It's very tedious. It's very time-consuming. And for us, we've started the initiative with one product, with our All Good Goop. And we've been doing it all along, but never had a really specific measurement criteria for actually what we're looking at. So what we created was a little internal scoring system, basically, to watch ourselves improve as we go. And we basically just look at a list of all of our suppliers, all of our vendors, and then we have a survey list of questions for them that relate to everything from do they incentivize employees for alternative vehicle use? Where do they get their power? Who picks up their garbage? How much do they produce? That kind of thing. And the tedious part of it is actually sometimes finding someone in these companies who is willing and interested to answer the questions. But, you know, we've been actually pretty pleasantly surprised that they're open, and that's part of what makes us interested in continuing working with companies is that, and, you know, it's part of B Corp and Green America as well, is what is your supply chain? And if you're not getting it from companies that are also treating people fairly and being conscious and actually taking a step to reduce their own carbon footprints, then what's the point? Because that's sort of a part of every product, right? It's a part of who we are as our suppliers, so...
Do you ever feel that that's, you know, more than you're willing to take on? I mean, here you're making these decisions and sacrifices in cost and in time and ease for some of these decisions to run your business responsibly. Do you ever feel like, man, now I've got to make more decisions based on someone else's actions? Like, can't I just tend to my own farm, so to speak?
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. It's tiring, but it always produces something that is better. Whenever I dig deeper, I always find something a new treasure. And
do you have any examples of that you could share?
Let me think of you know, we source our herbs from a number of different places, but sometimes from local growers, and then sometimes from different suppliers. And one of our suppliers of our herbs, we had no idea, but they're initiating all sorts of projects to help restore medicinal plant habitat in the United States, and that's part of what we were doing as well. But without asking the question, we didn't realize they were doing that also. So that's a great example. Also with the farmers, one of our farmers is the farm that we used to live on in Marin County, and she is able to keep growing calendula seeds from the original calendula seeds we planted in her garden, 10 years ago. And she is just taking all sorts of steps to take care of her piece of land in a beautiful and a restorative way. And by asking her the kind of questions, it almost inspired her to take some things to the next level in that way in terms of seed saving and projects that are more permaculture oriented, like water saving techniques and things like that. So just by opening the dialogue, it really sometimes sparks a new direction that others wouldn't know about. And, you know, in an urban environment, some of our manufacturers are working with inner city employees and creating living wages for inner city employees. And that, to me, is really important because that's not something that we can tap into directly. You know, we live in rural Central California. We don't tap into a population in inner city environments. So that's one of our ways to create a longer arm, in a sense.
If you did, for the audits, do you develop the questions yourself, or did you? How did you know what questions to develop? I'm just trying to think about if other businesses are looking to do this.
Well, we pull from a number of different organizations that are doing similar things. So. We looked at B Corp survey questions. We looked through Cradle to Cradle, Bill McDonough's organization. He has a whole product audit. We looked at those questions. We just basically pulled them from a number of different organizations that we respect. Their carbonfootprint.org is another one we looked at.
And do you sometimes have to stop working with a supplier or some type of company or service you're using based on the results of these audits? And what's that like?
We always, as a good business practice, we always try to have multiple sources for things. And you have to keep the business going. So, we always have our top-level choice, which is, one, the one that's closest to us, and two, the one that is, most aligned with our values. And so that it's absolutely the most important to make that decision. And then I have yet to find a company that's like, whoa. I think for me, just in the very beginning when I was looking at what places to get things, it was already kind of a part of my filter. It was just to, if there was somebody who really didn't care about how they were doing things, or if they were creating waste and didn't care about it, or if I read about them in the newspaper or something, I wouldn't go source things from them. So I think I've been lucky in that way. I've started on the right track, in a sense. But, you know, to just switch it around, would I stop using a supplier if I learned that, they're dumping plastic into a river? Absolutely. It would be a very easy decision.
What's the program you do with activist athletes?
Well, that was, we started, because our roots are as well in wellness and wilderness, so in using our bodies in the outdoors and being active, and we were interested in having people on board that loved our products and were out there in the world doing things, but we wanted to take it a step further. So a lot of companies sponsor athletes, and those athletes are kind of an extra marketing effort for them, but for us it was we can't just sponsor athletes because some athletes are so into themselves and they really don't care anything about what they're doing. So we felt like it would be the most the most fitting to find people who are also environmental activists. And I think part of it too for me on a personal level is some of my activism, quote unquote. Maybe I haven't been doing things as much since I'm running a business now in terms of going out there and speaking out about, from a business level, but speaking out about specific causes. So it's sort of a way to live vicariously through them as well. So that's exactly it. You called it the Activist Athlete Program, and we sponsor activists and the athletes, and the requirements are that, number one, they excel at a human-powered sport. We don't care if they're professionals or they're champions or anything, but we just want them to excel at a human-powered sport. The second is that they love Elemental Herbs products and use them. And the third is that they are dedicated to fighting nonviolently for an environmental or social cause. So we have four top athletes on that team. And do you want me to just describe them quickly?
No, it's okay. What attracted me about this program in regards to the other things you do is that it seemed fun, and it seemed didn't have the impression that, hey, let's create this because it's going to tie into our business and it's going to get our product out there and we'll look good. And it didn't seem to have any self-consciousness about marketing or branding. It just seemed like a cool thing that you wanted to do. And, you know, I say that as a part of emphasizing the different initiatives you have that spring naturally from your interests, and I'm sure the interests of your colleagues. And I guess really what I'm dipping into is that these, if you're tapping into what's of interest and what sincerely you care about, these programs come about that happen to be sustainable and responsible without having to sketch them out in detail and think about the public's reaction and the investor reaction and your consumer reaction and, you know, engagement levels and such. And I think that your company seems to be a great example of having that that happen naturally.
Absolutely.
That was a long-winded way of saying that.
Yeah, I mean, fun is one of our core values, and oftentimes just being who we are and how we move along, fun equals something that's good for us and good for other people and inherently good for the world. So it's kind of like the extra bonus that we get to play, and we get to watch these athletes go out and do the things that they're doing, you know, cranking in amazing ways in their sports. And then also, you know, Allison Gannick's example, going around and teaching municipalities about how to reduce carbon footprint in a very calculated way and save our snow, or Jonathan Waterman be able to go travel the Colorado River from source to sea and then come back from that journey and write a book about it and lecture about all the uses of the river and what's going on in the river and how to take care of it. Or Jordan Romero is getting ready to climb Mount Everest. This is 6 out of 7 tallest mountain on all the 7 continents. And he goes around and educates about how to prevent childhood obesity and just take care of our bodies. You know, he's 13 years old now, so he's...
oh, my gosh.
He's incredible. He's going to be the youngest guy in the world to climb all 7 summits if he completes this one in Antarctica in December. And then Leslie Ross, a telemark skier, runs Babes in the Backcountry in Breckenridge, Colorado, and also does yoga teacher training and gets women out into the wilderness. So, you know, that's just a quick run-through on what they do. But how can we not just be so excited to have them out there? And, you know, they're connecting us with other companies, and they're giving out our products to their students or their friends. Or, you know, from Jordan's example, he's sending me satellite messages from the top of Aconcagua and how our sore muscle spray Herbal Cool helped him get up the mountain. And we just absolutely love the relationship and would love to grow it. It's part of our goal is to grow those programs as well.
So Yvonne Chenod from Patagonia calls himself the reluctant entrepreneur. Do you see yourself as an entrepreneur or a business person now?
That's a good question. I certainly resist it, but it's inevitable in a way. You know, I like to see myself as an educator and a student of business and of sustainable practices and healing. So all those wrapped up in, and I would say, you know, the last 4.5 years has taught me quite a bit about business, but I think I have a long way to go to really be able to, to see how the success of this turns into whatever it does. But yeah, I mean, you know, long answer.
Well, as a student of business and as someone running a business, do you have advice for other entrepreneurs or small businesses? I know you had talked a bit before about planning and organization. Is there any other thing that comes to mind?
You know, a lesson that I get every day is to listen to my gut. That's a big one, because you can spend a lot of time running numbers and figuring things out on a non-heart level. But in the end, you know, I think we all really know what's the right decision to make. It'd be one. I mean, I could go on forever on business ideas, just in terms of, you know, I've made so many mistakes along the way that I can look back on and just laugh about. It's always good to just just to remember where we are in time and space in terms of like not making decisions that would be for some multinational corporation when you're selling $1,000 a month. I mean, just I guess what that would wrap itself into is we don't need to take ourselves too seriously.
Mm-hmm. Can you share an example of one of the lessons that you learned through trial and error?
So many, really. I think one of them was going to a trade show too early in the game, and really not knowing what it would take to do the trade show, and showing up and realizing we were in a shark tank and we were minnows. That's probably one example. Every day. What's that?
Because you didn't have enough products or enough.
Yeah, not enough products and yeah, exactly, all of it. Everything, all of our labels were all hand attached and hand printed and hand cut, and we did all right, and we handled it, and we got orders, and we went back and we were able to fill them, no problem. But it was just an early in the game kind of thing. Let's see. That's probably the best example is getting early on getting orders and being excited about it and then realizing that we didn't have the product and we'd have to go out and make it again on the fly is a good example.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of filling our orders just with late night and early morning production sessions.
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty common in these types at some point, when the demand catches up with supply or outpaces it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the last question I have is some other role models in terms of leaders or businesses that you look to. I know we've spoken a couple of times about Patagonia. What are some other companies?
Absolutely. One of my favorites is Guayaquil, and they make mate, actually, from down where you are right now.
Ah, yes.
They get it from Paraguay. But a phrase that I often quote from them is market-driven restoration. And to me, that says it all. It's, you're driving the market by restoring. In their example, they're growing organic mate in Paraguay with groups of people and Argentina too, I think with local people that's helping them. They're a great company to look at. Cliff, my example from Cliff and Cliff Bar is the incentive they give their employees. They offer amazing incentives to their employees for using alternative vehicles and for taking care of themselves. They'll basically give them money to buy a hybrid and things like that. And they have a gym in their headquarters. I mean, those kind of things I really appreciate. Let's see. Locally, we have some companies locally that do a great job of fair trade, like Slow Chai is a company in San Luis Obispo, and they really stick to their guns on fair trade sourcing. I really appreciate them in that way. Pangea Organics. I think they're really doing a great job of sourcing high quality ingredients, and I really like their model there. Dr. Bronner's is another role model for me, and one of the things I really appreciate that they do is they speak out. They're not afraid, and I think it's pretty cool. Their brand has been established for so long, and now it's the second generation taking it over, but they are not afraid to speak out about what is important to their core values and to share that with other businesses and other individuals and to their customers. They work on legalizing the growth of hemp in the United States. One of their seniors, Sue Castenson, works on a project called Fair Shake, which is preventing recidivism for felons. I think that is just such a beautiful component, and it's such a lost component in business to have an activism as an aspect of the business. So it's another role model of ours. Those are the best I can think of right now.
Yeah, no, those are great. This has been really interesting to talk with you. Is there anything else that you want to leave us with before we end?
No, just thank you very much as well. And I think, you know, if there's anything I can say as far as continuing on for us, it's a humble journey, but it's one full of appreciation. So that is what keeps it fun. And I think that any business can embrace a similar path very well and for their own benefit also.
Well, thank you, Caroline.
Thank you.
For more interviews about cause capitalism, visit causecapitalism.com.